Oh, yes, it's the hour of the time. I'm William Cooper.
And I'm Carolyn Nelson.
And what are we going to do tonight? Well, we're going to talk about a few things, but right off the bat, before we get started, I want to tell you that Arizona is not the only bunch of sheriffs that are getting it all together, folks. I have here an article from the Ravelli Republic from Hamilton, Montana. Sheriff vows to defy Brady Bill. How about that? It's spreading. Ravelli County Sheriff Jay Prince does not intend to comply with new federal government mandates resulting from the passage of the Brady Law, which goes into effect February 28th, and that's all I need to read from that article. Hallelujah, brother. This is wonderful. I hope the rest of you are putting the bug in your sheriff's ear. One gentleman called today and said he talked to his local sheriff, and his local sheriff told him he was not going to risk federal funding to the county to try and protect the Constitution. What do you think about that? I think if you got a sheriff like that, folks, as soon as they make some kind of a statement like that, you got to get rid of them. Get rid of them. Impeach them for treason. That's what it is. It's treason. You cannot enforce the Brady Bill. It is unconstitutional. It's against the second article in amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America. And I don't know about your state, but it is against the Constitution of the state of Arizona, which specifically states, unequivocally, that Arizonans shall have the right to keep and bear arms.
And Bill, remember, we the citizens now are monitoring what is going on in our country and in our states. So everybody out there should be in touch with their sheriffs, should know what they stand for, and should be ready to take action in case.
And you should have a huge set of shark jaws made up. And if they're not doing the right thing, you should follow them around, snapping these shark jaws right behind their butt. That ought to get their attention. And there really wouldn't be anything that they could do to stop you from doing that, would there?
And you in your in your town, your city, your county, you can have your own march. You won't have to drive all the way to Washington, D.C., as some of us did.
Well, we have to do more than march now, folks. Much more than march. Have to get serious. Now, many of you in the later show, this show, did not hear the earlier one. And let me quote. I'm just going to quote one paragraph from the 83rd Congress, second session, United States Senate document number 87. The title is The Review of the United Nations Charter, a collection of documents, subcommittee on the United Nations Charter, pursuant to Senate Resolution 126, 83rd Congress, first session, January 7, 1954. Just going to read one paragraph, ladies and gentlemen, so that you'll know what you missed. It says here, the efforts of our government in this regard reached fruition in the Convention of Representatives of the Nations of the Earth, at which the Charter of the United Nations was adopted. It was promptly ratified by the Senate of the United States, thereby proclaiming allegiance to its principles and providing precedent and example for other countries. The United States has consistently regarded its treaties with other nations as inviolate. The Charter has become, quote, the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. I hope you understand what you just heard, and that's from a United States Senate document published January 7th, 1954. 83rd Congress, Second Session, United States Senate, document number 87, Review of the United Nations Charter. It's all over, but the crying and the fighting and the dying, and then the rejoicing.
Do not forsake me, oh my darling, on this our wedding day. Do not forsake me, oh my darling. Wait, wait long. I do not know what fate awaits me. I only know I must be brave, and I must face the man who hates me. For life a coward, a craven coward, for life a coward in my grave. Oh, to be torn twixt love and duty, supposing I lose my fair-haired beauty. Look at that big hand move along here in my room. He made a vow while in state's prison, vowed it would be my life for his. I'm not afraid of death, but oh, what will I do if you leave me? Do not forsake me, oh my darling. You made that promise as a bride. Do not forsake me, oh my darling. Although you're grieving, don't think of leaving. Now that I need you by my side, wait along.
I certainly hope you don't die a craven coward in your grave. Statement by White House Press Secretary Marlon Fitzwater, Washington, D.C., March 24, 1992. Today, the United States, along with Canada and 22 European nations, signed the Treaty on Open Skies in Helsinki, Finland. In May 1989, at a time when the immense changes seen in Europe over the past 3 years were just beginning, President Bush proposed that the nations of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, and the former Warsaw Pact agree to open their territories to frequent overflights by observation aircraft from the other side. The United States believes that the greater transparency in military activities brought about by such an agreement will help reduce the chances of military confrontation and build confidence in the peaceful intentions of the participating states. The Open Skies Treaty is the most wide-ranging international confidence-building regime ever developed, covering the entire territory of North America and nearly all of Europe and the former Soviet Union. Its arrangements for observation flights using photographic radar and infrared sensors, and its provisions for sharing among participants the information gathered, are innovative means to help promote openness and stability in Europe in these uncertain times. Open skies could also serve as a basis for similar arrangements in other regions of the world where there is a need to build confidence. The treaty establishes an Open Skies Consultative Commission. In early April, it will convene in Vienna, Austria, to complete work on outstanding technical and cost issues regarding treaty implementation. The treaty will be submitted to the United States Senate for its advice and consent to ratification once this work is finished to the satisfaction of all participants. U.S. Department of State Dispatch, March 30th, 1992, page 257, Open Skies Treaty. The Treaty on Open Skies is the most wide-ranging international effort to date to promote the openness of military forces and activities. It is designed to improve mutual understanding and confidence by giving all participating countries, regardless of size, a direct role in gathering information about military forces and activities of concern to them. In Europe, it meets the desire of many countries to build confidence and enhance stability now that the bipolar division of the continent has ended. In other regions, this type of openness and the techniques developed in the treaty could be applied in reducing regional tensions and preventing conflict. Open Skies was first proposed. By President Eisenhower at the Geneva Conference of 1955. The idea was rejected by the Soviet Union. When President Bush reformulated the Open Skies concept in May 1989, the world was on the verge of rapid change. Open Skies was proposed as a means of confidence building, which would promote and consolidate existing trends toward openness. Now, you notice, folks, that almost everything that you're hearing on here originated in the Truman and Eisenhower years. If you've always thought of those two gentlemen as patriots, you had better think again, for they sold this country right straight down the tubes. And then, John F. Kennedy is the one who pushed through the disarmament agreement. Formal negotiations on an open skies treaty began in Ottawa in February 1990 and continued in Budapest in April, May 1990. However, it was apparent that the Soviet Union was not prepared to open all its territory to aerial observation. After the Ottawa-Budapest stalemates, negotiations were on hold for more than a year. Although the United States and other countries kept pressing the issue bilaterally, only after the abortive August 1991 Moscow coup attempt did the former Soviet Union agree to open all its territory to observation. This cleared the way, and productive negotiations began November 1991 in Vienna. The treaty was signed in Helsinki on March 24, 1992. 24 countries participated in the negotiation of the treaty. Belgium, Bulgaria, Belarus, Canada, the Czech and Slovak Republic, Denmark, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Iceland, Italy, Luxembourg, Netherlands, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Russia, Spain, Turkey, Ukraine, the United Kingdom, and the United States. Other republics on the territory of the former Soviet Union may, if they choose, also sign the treaty as initial participants. Georgia did so March 24th. Other countries participating in the conferences on security and cooperation in Europe were invited as observers to the negotiations, and it is expected that many of them will apply for full participation in the treaty soon after it enters into force. The treaty is open to accession by any interested country, subject to the agreement of the other participants. It is not restricted geographically. Now let me ask you, ladies and gentlemen, in lieu of the fact that we have been overflying the Soviet Union for many, many years, beginning with the U-2 overflights, continuing with the SR-71 Blackbird, and of course whatever has taken its place, because they would never have taken it out of our aircraft complement unless there was something to replace it. Also, we have a vast array of spy satellites in orbit looking down upon the Soviet Union all the time. What is this Open Skies Treaty all about? Was it to give us access to the atmosphere over the Soviet Union? No, ladies and gentlemen, because we already had it and have always had it. And the only interruption was when they shot down Francis Gary Powers in his U-2 back during the Eisenhower administration. No SR-71 has ever been shot down, nor has any SR-71 flight ever been interdicted, nor have any of our spy satellites been interdicted, shot down, destroyed, or knocked out of orbit. So what is this all about? Very simply, ladies and gentlemen, it allows the Soviet Union, or what used to be the Soviet Union, what's left of the Soviet Union, which still has the entire military might intact, to overfly the airspace of the United States of America, which never was permitted before. And that's the truth of the matter. Several people called me the other day and described a very strange aircraft that they saw flying low across the desert. What they described to me, ladies and gentlemen, was a Russian bear bomber. A Russian bear bomber. Now, I didn't see it. I was going by their description. And I am telling you right now, what they described was a Russian bear bomber. You can go to your library and look up a picture of one, and you can see that there's nothing else that matches that description. There's nothing else that large that matches that description that has propeller-driven engines, ladies and gentlemen. I can tell you now that every day, every night, aircraft of the former Soviet Union are overflying the United States on a regular and continuing basis. Military bombers, military logistics aircraft, reconnaissance aircraft, and of course, passenger aircraft. Interesting? I would say yes. The treaty establishes an Open Skies Consultative Commission, which will meet in Vienna to monitor the operation of the treaty and to discuss and resolve any problems which may arise. The treaty is of unlimited duration and provides for periodic review conferences. For the United States, the On-Site Inspection Agency, OSIA, will be responsible for conducting and receiving Open Skies flights in coordination with the Department of Defense and other relevant agencies. For those of you who doubt that they're overflying the United States, they not only overfly the United States, but have landed at many major airports across the country. And yes, Soviet bombers have been part of those aircraft which have landed at American airfields. Open Skies is not a system for gathering detailed technical intelligence, but it will enable countries to collect basic information on the military capabilities and activities of other countries, thereby enhancing mutual security and confidence. They used to call that spying, ladies and gentlemen, and they used to say that it was not in the best interest of the national security to have another country monitoring our military defense capabilities and activities. What do you think? It is explicitly a general purpose observation system and is not tied to any arms control agreement. If it's not tied to an arms control agreement, what is the purpose other than to destroy the defense of the United States of America? Long ago, we grounded all of our B-52 alert force. We disbanded the Strategic Air Command. We are vulnerable. Extremely vulnerable, I might add. Participating countries may, of course, seek information through open skies, which would be relevant to arms control agreements to which they are parties. Raw data obtained from observation flights, for example, film, negatives, and magnetic tape, will be shared by the observing and observed countries. Oh, isn't that nice? They fly over our nation, spy on us, take photographs, magnetic tapes, and then they turn around and give us copies so that we'll know what we already have. That's nice. That's very big of them. Other countries participating in the Open Skies Treaty will be able to purchase copies of data in which they are interested from the observing country. Individual countries are responsible for their own analysis of the raw data. We're going to skip ahead now, folks. 2, United States Department of State Dispatch, March 29, 1993, Volume 4, Number 13, page 185. Open Skies Treaty will enhance international security, and there is the true answer. You see, it does away with our security. It does away with the defense of our airspace, but it enhances international security. It enhances the security of the emerging one world government, the United Nations. This is a statement before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Washington, D.C., March 11, 1993, by John H. Hawes, United States Representative to the Open Skies Conference. Mr. Chairman, I am honored to testify before this committee in support of the Open Skies Treaty. As Secretary Christopher indicated in his letter of March 4th to Chairman Pell, the treaty, quote, will contribute to mutual understanding and confidence building by giving all states' parties, regardless of size, a direct role in gathering information about military forces and activities of interest to them. I hope you know, folks, that this means that Bangladesh could also overfly us. If they can get anything off the ground. I don't know if they have anything. They probably do. This treaty has been made possible by the dramatic political changes of the last several years when former President Eisenhower first proposed cooperative aerial observation in 1955. The idea was summarily rejected by the Soviet Union. Indeed, it was only after the abortive coup in Moscow in August 1991 that an agreement could be negotiated embodying the values of openness and cooperative international observation. In my remarks, I will briefly describe the contents and operation of the treaty. Before doing so, let me put that in context by noting the 4 essential ways in which the Treaty on Open Skies will contribute to international security in the post-Cold War world. First, the treaty empowers all signatory states, regardless of size, wealth, or level of technology, to acquire meaningful security information on neighboring countries. This means Cuba could overfly the United States, folks. This will enhance the confidence of all participants and enable them to play more responsible roles in maintaining regional and international security. This means Haiti could overfly the United States, folks. In this regard, moreover, by generating information which can be easily shared and discussed among participants, The Open Skies Treaty will avoid the difficulties often encountered in working with restricted information. This means Japan could drop coupons for VCRs upon the United States, ladies and gentlemen, in the coming trade wars. Second, this treaty nails down the key principle of full territorial openness. All the territory of all the participants will be open to observation, including specifically all the territory of states which formerly restricted large portions of their territory on grounds of national security. Now, according to our United States Constitution and the law, folks, if it weren't for the fact that our Constitution was not in effect, this treaty would only apply to that known as the federal government constituted within the boundary of that district known as Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, Guam, American Samoa, and the United States Marshall Islands. I'm going to write an article for Foreign Affairs, the Journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, and submit it and see if they will print it. You know what? I just have a feeling they will. If they do, it's going to be very interesting. The United States insisted on full openness during the negotiations as a sine qua non for an effective confidence-building regime. The United States determined at the outset, moreover, that such an unprecedented degree of openness would not pose an unmanageable security risk within the United States itself. Oh, no! Oh, no! When the Cold War was going, oh, it was the biggest tragedy in the world if a little plane veered off course from Iceland and touched the tip of New York. And now they're telling us, this would not pose an unmanageable security risk within the United States itself if every nation in the world can overfly our airspace anytime they want to. These people sure make a lot of sense, don't they? So when were they lying? Before or now? I think they've always been lying. Third, the treaty dramatically advances the tools available for confidence building. Yes, I think the Russians are going to be very confident now that they can overfly our country and take photographs they've never been able to take before, even with their wonderful satellites, because their satellites have never been so wonderful, folks. That was a big scam. You see, the Soviet Union was never even able to produce even the most rudimentary computer chip. Therefore, their technology has always been in the Dark Ages. Did you know that? Did you know that? Over the past two decades, the array of confidence-building measures has expanded steadily. Now the Open Skies Treaty adds to this toolkit detailed procedures for aerial observation with agreed sensors, predetermined quotas, and no right of refusal. No right of refusal. No right of refusal. Which means even if we wanted to, we can't tell them to get out of our airspace and go home and stop overflying the United States according to the terms of the treaty. It also establishes a new framework for contacts, cooperation, and consultation among participating states. Fourth, the treaty establishes a major precedent which may prove particularly useful in other parts of the world beyond the original signatories in reducing tensions, contributing to greater mutual understanding, and reinforcing regional peace and security. Other nations outside the Europe-Atlantic area where the treaty was negotiated have already expressed interest in the treaty. That's right, folks. Bimini will be sending overflights. Mr. Chairman, I would like to describe the principal provisions of the Open Skies Treaty relating to participation coverage, sensors, quotas, aircraft data, and costs. Yes, folks, costs. Because whenever the United States does something, they always pay for it. So we're probably going to pay for the gas and the planes for the other nations to overfly us. I mean, that's what we've always done in the past, isn't it? What makes you think it's going to be any different this time? Well, I don't know if they're going to do that or not, but, I mean, what's to cost? We've always been overflying. What's to cost? Unless we're going to pay for somebody else to overfly us. It gets complicated. I mean, the more you look at this, the more absolutely absurd it becomes. I think, ladies and gentlemen, the world has turned into the largest insane asylum in the universe. And we're all competing to see who can be the nuttiest. Don't go away.
Day I face a barren waste without the taste of water. Ooh, water, water, cold and alive with hopes burned dry and
yes, cool water. Anybody who's really been crawling across the desert for some time knows how important cool water is. And in the coming months and years, cool water is going to become even more important. Because, folks, one of the provisions for subduing a civilian population is to poison their water supply. And you can find that in any military manuals outlining plans for occupying countries with a hostile population. Wells, water supplies, reservoirs could be, I'm not saying that they will be, I'm saying they could be poisoned or rendered undrinkable. So, how are you going to take care of that? Well, that's up to you. A lot of different ways. And when you take care of your water supply, what about your food? And when you've taken care of your food, what about provisions for the time when you run out of all of these things and you need to barter for more, or for clothing, or for your very life, for freedom? Call Swiss America Trading right now, 1-800-289-2646. They specialize in non-confiscatable, non-reportable hard assets. You know, precious metals in its various forms has been the only thing throughout the history of the world that people have recognized as money in the hardest times, in all the times that have been hard throughout history, in all the countries of the world, with all the peoples that have ever lived. There is nothing else that is that secure or that can promise you that kind of security. It doesn't exist, folks. Unless you're able to accumulate a large stockpile of the most necessary items to human comfort and be able to staff an army to protect it and sit on top of it and use that to barter with, then you need to call Swiss America Trading. Now, don't get all caught up in this non-confiscatable, non-reportable stuff that all of these people keep feeding at you, because that could change with the stroke of a pen, and you know it. And I know it. So what may be non-reportable and non-confiscatable today, tomorrow could carry the death penalty. So act accordingly. Don't buy into all these things. Just make sure that you understand that you need some kind of precious metal in one of its various forms to secure your future. Call Swiss America Trading now, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. 646 Do It Now. Thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time. Mention my name, William Cooper, and ask for all the available literature that you're entitled to as a listener to this program. And, ladies and gentlemen, you will be treated like a VIP, and the red carpet will be rolled out for you.
Come and sit by my side if you love me. Do not hasten to bid me adieu. But remember the Red River Valley and the cowboy that loved you so true. From this valley they say you are leaving. We will miss your bright eyes and sweet smile. Or they say you are taking the sunshine.
I remember as a small boy riding in the car with my parents. Old car. Don't ask me what it was because I don't know. All I know it was old. My dad used to sing all these songs. All of them. He knew them all by heart. Streets of Laredo. All of them. Good memories. In competition with today, you know, we're all positions, ladies and gentlemen, to either be responsible for the loss of the penultimate of human achievement throughout all the ages on this earth, or we can bring a future into the world that will be the best that the world has ever known, based upon this nation, which has been the best, the most powerful, the most promising, has given us the most opportunity, the most freedom. In fact, the only freedom that's ever existed in this world belonged to the American people for many years. It's gone now. But it doesn't have to stay gone. Not at all. But it's going to depend upon what is in your heart and how much you're willing to sacrifice to give our children what we once had, or something much better. I continue with the Open Skies Treaty from the U.S. Department of State Dispatch, March 29, 1993, Volume 4, Number 13, page 185. The Open Skies Treaty was negotiated between the members of NATO and members of the former Warsaw Pact. The latter organization dissolved during the course of the talks. Original signatories include all 16 NATO states, the East European members of the former Warsaw Pact, and five of the successor states of the former Soviet Union: Belarus, Georgia, Kyrgyzstan, I think I pronounced that right, KYRGYZSTAN, and I must be honest, I've never even seen that name before in my entire life. And I have studied the Soviet Union. I don't know how that happened, but it's the truth. The truth on this show, folks. I've got egg on my face. Russia and Ukraine. Since signature of the treaty on March 24, 1992, the former Czech and Slovak Republic has divided into two separate states. Both are in the process of reaffirming their participation in the treaty. The treaty is now open to signature by all seven other successor states of the former Soviet Union. Following entry into force, the treaty will be open to requests for accession by all states participating in the Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe. The treaty and the Open Skies concept are not, however, confined to Europe. Beginning 6 months after entry into force, any state, without regard to geographic limitations, can accede to the Open Skies Treaty, provided that it will contribute to the objectives of the treaty and has the consensus approval of the Open Skies Consultative Commission. So you learned in 1992 that anybody could overfly anybody, and now you're learning that they have a little committee there that says whether somebody can overfly or they can't. So who's doing what to who and why, and who's been told that they can't do anything to anybody? Amazing. Coverage. The Open Skies Treaty provides that all of the territory of participating states must be open to observation. No exceptions are permitted for national security purposes. Observation flights will follow routes set up by the observing party. Only modifications for legitimate reasons of flight safety may be proposed. The question of full territorial access was debated within the U.S. government when the initial Open Skies proposal was developed. At that time, a decision was made that full access was essential to the political and confidence-building objectives of the proposal, and that such access could be provided in the United States consistent with national security, given the previous restrictions in force in the former Soviet Union. This requirement for full territorial access was perhaps the subject most intensely debated in the negotiation. Agreement was only reached in the fall of 1991, following the abortive Moscow coup of August 1991. The treaty text not only affirms the principle of full territorial access, but also spells out how this is to be implemented effectively in actual aerial operations. The treaty does this with detailed provisions on the formulation of the flight plan to ensure that the observation objectives of the observing party will be achieved. That means, ladies and gentlemen, if the Soviet Union, or what used to be the Soviet Union, if Russia wants to photograph a specific top-secret military target within the United States, that we are to help them with the formulation of the flight plan to ensure that the observation objectives of the observing party will be achieved. But you just try walking anywhere near it. See how fast you get arrested. So who is it being kept secret from? Not the Russians. Not the Russians, folks. That never has been. Once the question of access was determined, the second factor shaping the quality and quantity of information which the participants could gather in Open Skies was the package of sensors to be employed. For the United States, the sensors which have been agreed to for use in Open Skies will not provide a significant new source of information. Should I continue with this? I mean, this is just the most absurd. I feel like I'm reading a comic book.
May I just interject? Could we Americans please have the same rights as the Russians?
Well, you know, we don't really need them. You see, we don't even need this whole creed. The reason it will not provide a significant new source of information for us is because we have all the information. We've been overflying the Soviet Union for what, 40 years? Oh, boy. For most other participants, however, the ability to utilize the Open Skies sensor suite to observe the full territory of the other participating countries will represent a new and very significant enhancement in their ability to gather security-related information. If the country in question does not have the technology to supply the sensor rack, the member nations will help them acquire the proper technology. How about that, ladies and gentlemen? The United States, however, will be a major indirect beneficiary of this increase in knowledge, confidence, and security of the other participants. This, in fact, was one of the primary considerations behind the U.S. initiative in presenting the Open Skies idea and bringing the negotiations to a successful conclusion. All parties in Open Skies will have access to sensors of equal capabilities. And if they don't have, we'll give it to them. In the spring of 1990, the East European states obtained agreement from the United States and its NATO allies that all participants would have access to sensor capabilities equal to those employed by any other participant. which means if Haiti wants to overfly the United States and the little committee gives them the go-ahead, we've got to give them the state-of-the-art, state-of-the-art in reconnaissance equipment in order to be able to fulfill their mission. Thank you, Pooh. My fan club is clapping in the background. All parties in open skies will have access to sensors of equal capabilities. This is insane. You see, folks, it would be insane if, in fact, we had an enemy anywhere. We really don't. The enemy is the people. And what's happening in the world is a great drama being played out to cause the people to ask for control on a global basis so that they can put together their one world totalitarian socialist government without a civilian armed uprising. You see, this is quite all right because the Soviet Union is not and never has been our ally. We built the Soviet Union. We gave them all of the technology we ever had. We gave them the atomic bomb. William Casey was the man instrumental in building for them the Kama River Truck Factory, which is the largest rolling stock mechanized factory in the entire world, which could produce more tanks, trucks, jeeps, and lorries than all of our combined manufacturing capability together in the United States of America. William Casey was the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, amongst many other things, and was a member of the Sovereign and Military Order of the Knights of Malta. He was a member of the OSS and the Knights Templar. He did not die of a stroke, as you were told. William Casey, ladies and gentlemen, was not murdered, as many have proclaimed. William Casey was a man who, if called to testimony to Congress, would have told the truth. William Casey, as any good intelligence operative will tell you, committed suicide so that he would not have to do that, because he would have spilled the whole beans about all of this. Because irregardless of what he was working to bring about in the world, he believed that he was right in doing it. And he was a truthful man. He was passionate about doing away with war. And he really believed in his heart that one world government was the only way to do it. However, he failed to understand that no matter what they implement or put into place, it will still be imperfect men ruling imperfect men. It will still be greedy men with power in their hands and lust in their hearts. And of course, when they're operating from the Luciferian principle, it is not ameliorated by the principles of mercy or understanding. Nope, it is cold and cruel and intrepid and comes strictly from a point of the intellect. There's no emotion involved, no compassion, no mercy, no heart, no love. That's what's wrong with all of these people. Ollie North was not the man that you think he is. All the time that he was operating behind the scenes, shredding the Constitution page by page, article by article, paragraph by paragraph, he was operating from a cold, calculating, cruel, intrepid point of intellect. It wasn't until he himself was caught and called upon the carpet of the Congress that he became initially emotionally motivated, and his voice began to crack, and he sounded like a little boy caught with his hand in the cookie jar, screaming for understanding and sympathy. All the while wearing the uniform of men of the United States Marine Corps. Ollie North disgraced that uniform. He was in the process of shredding the Constitution, and his act in front of Congress was just that, an act and nothing more. He is, in fact, a traitor. But many of you have paid a lot of money into his pockets to go and listen to him talk about how he is a patriot. When are you going to wake up? When? When are you going to wake up? How long is it going to take? How many of us have to risk our lives and take the brunt of the anger of these people to try to get you to stand up and accept the responsibility of your own role in all of this? How many Carolyn Nelsons have to start out in an old broken down car and weave our way across the country, handing out copies of the Constitution and being called a crazy old lady in the car over there before you all come to your senses? At what point in our history did patriotism become a dirty word and patriots become right-wing Aryan racists? How did all of that happen? And when is it going to stop? And what is going to be your role in it? And when am I going to stop hearing, I'm afraid to stand up, I'm afraid to say something, I'm afraid to write a letter because I might get on somebody's list? You're already on the list. There's one list. And if you're not one of them, you're one of us, and you are on that one list. And if you don't stand up with us and help fight this battle, and we lose this battle, you are going to be a slave in the New World Order. It's as simple as that. Nothing complicated about any of this, ladies and gentlemen. It is very simple. You either believe in what you've always professed to believe in, and you are willing to fight and die for those beliefs and ideals, or you have always been a hypocrite and a liar. Are you one who will not stand up now and help us fight this battle, but you patted your son on the ass and sent him off to the Middle East to die in the desert? Is that who you are? Are you one of the old war veterans who sits around in dark VFW halls drinking beer and telling lies? Or do you really love freedom? Do you really care about your children and your grandchildren? Or are you one of those who says, I don't have to get involved in this. By the time all this comes about, I'll be dead. Or my government retirement check is our only income, so I can't help. Or, as many do, Mr. Cooper, in light of all that you've said tonight, what can I do to best protect my assets? I tell you now, ladies and gentlemen, you better start worrying about your ass more and about your assets less. Are you going to be left with none of all of the above? What do you think about all of this? What are you willing to do to live free, to work free, to speak free, to think free, to marry free, to live where you want, to travel freely, to choose your own doctor, to choose your own income through your own efforts, your own work, with your own brain? I've seen people around this country who lost a job on an automobile assembly line where they put two bolts in a panel and tightened them down as the assembly line moved on to the next station. And their life was ruined. They complained that they were too old to retrain for another job. And we all owed them something. When they made it impossible for me to work because of what I am doing, I simply created my own job. When they told me I could never get on radio, I laughed, and here I am. When they told me I could never say these things, I did. And when they asked me, Bill, aren't you afraid? Aren't you scared? Don't you know they're going to come after you? I asked in return, where were you when you sent me to fight and die in Vietnam? Why weren't you concerned about whether I was scared then? Or whether I was afraid, or whether the Viet Cong or the NVA was going to come after me? Why didn't you ask that of those you sent to fight and die in Desert Scam? You may know it as Desert Storm. Nevertheless, it is Desert Scam. The priorities of the American people are so mixed up and so screwed around and so corrupted. It will be a miracle if we can muster enough patriotic citizens to save a modicum of what we have left. And for those people, I will be here for you every night. Good night, and God bless you all.
Drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweed, cares of the past are behind. Nowhere to go but I'll find, just where the trail will wind. Drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweed, when night has gone, that a new world's born at dawn. I'll keep rolling along. Deep in my heart is a song. Here on the range I belong. Drifting along with a tumbling tumbling.